From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I'm mad about winter squash, about pumpkins, and so is my former Martha Stewart Living colleague, Lucinda Scala-Quinn, whom you may know as author of the Mad Hungry Cookbooks and a former host of the PBS series Everyday Food and of her own Mad Hungry TV show. We'll talk pumpkin recipes and more, but first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Lucinda Scala-Quinn has written 5 cookbooks with inspirations as diverse as Jamaican to rustic Italian, but whatever the culinary tradition she's writing and cooking in, her approach is always smart, can-do meals, ideas developed to feed and please her family of 5, including her 3 mad hungry sons. I'm so glad to reconnect with her today. So welcome, Lucinda. Hello, old friend.
Hello, Margaret. I'm always happy to talk to you about food. You grow it.
Yeah.
Well, you grow it and I cook it.
Yeah, but you actually, I was so excited to hear that you actually have a rooftop garden, although not a vegetable garden exactly, but a rooftop garden in New York City, don't you?
I do, and what's amazing over the years, I always say I'm like a kindergarten gardener because it's not my skill. I just kind of riff in a way, but what I have discovered over the years is what works and what can really augment my summer city cooking, which is amazing that like just cherry tomatoes, a bunch of herbs and some peppers, and all of a sudden it seems like I can just change everything up by just adding a little bit of freshness. And actually, it made me really realize that if you just have a couple plants, even on a fire escape, it lets you participate a little bit in the kind of edible gardening.
Yeah, and it does, as you say, it makes all the difference to have just those few things that really enliven. Even if I think both still love beans. We both cook dried beans and make bean dishes and stuff. And just what you said, just those items you said can change up beans into something really special.
Yeah, I mean, just yesterday I had black beans and I went out and I got a bunch of chives, some oregano, a pepper, and tomato, and minced them all together and cooked them down almost into a paste and then stirred that into the black beans that were already cooked. And that was all just from what I had in the little garden, in the tiny little garden.
Yeah. So pumpkin or squash, before we get into particular kind of winter squash recipes and ideas that I want to get from you, I wanted to ask sort of some basics, and maybe we'll have a healthy disagreement about some of these things, but like what are some of your favorite varieties, whether, you know, if you're going to the market or the farmer's market or whatever, what are you looking for different uses? Like if you're going to make a soup or if you're going to make, you know, a pie or roast something?
I mean, there again, I feel like, and this is again, coming from the cook who's less familiar of varieties in the garden as much as kind of what's there. And I know that the inside doesn't always, you know, portend, or the outside doesn't portend on what's
right
on the inside. For me, I always, you know, whether I'm getting, well, first of all, I love calabaza, which is not even a pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a squash.
Mm-hmm. Well, and all pumpkins are squash. Yeah. I mean, it's weird, like taxonomically.
I feel like I should be asking you. But, I mean, for instance, sugar pumpkin, I will tend to want to get the little sugar pumpkins when I'm making pie because I find that it's a little denser, beautiful color.
Yes.
A little edge of sweetness and... But then again, what I basically do once I get inside the pumpkin I have, regardless of what it is, I try to judge the level of liquid I'm going to end up with.
Yes.
So I tend to do a lot of savory cooking with pumpkin. Like, you know, I'll make a stew or I'll make I was thinking about pumpkin gnocchi with a sage butter that I make all the time, which literally is like 4 ingredients. And depending on whether or not the pumpkin, once I've cooked it, it has a lot of moisture, I'll just drain it. And if not, because I don't want too much moisture in the gnocchi. So in terms of varieties, it's often squash that's stepping in for pumpkin.
Right, and you're saying pumpkin sort of more generically, like it looks like a pumpkin as opposed to it
and
looks
acts like a pumpkin.
Yeah. And so what it is, I mean, a great collector of pumpkin, as they say, germplasm seeds, a guy who his collection went to become part of the Seed Savers Exchange years ago, Glenn Drowns out in, and we actually did a story on Martha Stewart Living about him. He collected all these heirloom varieties of, and he told me years ago, he said, they're all squash, but, you know, we think of some of them as pumpkins. There's different species. And so, you know, we think of some of them like the zucchinis, the summer squash, and some of the butternut, you know, the winter squash. We think of those as squash more than some others. But anyway, the different species have different qualities and so on and so forth. So it's okay to call them pumpkins or squash. But
so
like
all pumpkins are squash, but not all squash are
Yes,
pumpkins.
Exactly. Something like that.
Great.
So do you, like, I mean, I've seen, you know, some of the great cooks who say, I hate butternut for making soup. Well, I love butternut for making soup. Do you have any kind of, like, I wouldn't do this or I wouldn't do that or, you know?
You know, again, I feel like I don't live necessarily near a farm stand. Mm-hmm. My marketing really has to do with, did I get to the farmer's market? Am I in the grocery store or the local deli?
Right.
And what's where? So it's really, I first of all, I don't ascribe pretty much to any of those hard and fast rules because I feel like I've spent my career refuting almost all of them. I don't always soak my beans, you know, talking about beans again.
No, me neither.
you know, I don't sear a roast on top of the stove before I cook it at a high heat because I feel like, why do I need to mess the stove? And, of course, there are, you know, the great magazine, Cooks Illustrated back in the day, they made a whole business out of that. So I never say I won't do anything, and I will always experiment. And I was with a farmer recently who gave me a squash. I don't even know what it is, a pumpkin. It was dark green, elongated. It was an heirloom. And when I opened it up, I was stunned. I do not know what it was, but all I know is that I had that orange flesh. It was dense.
Mm-hmm.
It had that marvelous scent when you cut into squash that it's,
yeah.
I don't even know how to describe it. It's like, right, it's just like fresh life or something. I don't know. It just smells so amazing. And then, you know, I feel like either I'm roasting or like just today when I was making something, I was was peeling the outside of the squash and I was of the pumpkin, rather. This was a small little sugar pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised at how thin the skin was. So I don't have, I won't do this or I will do this.
Mm-hmm.
I know that depending on what's available and what I can get, I try to adapt.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I know that there are, you know, chefs who are, you know, particularly designing dishes around different kinds of pumpkin and
yes.
squash. And
yes.
I just kind of, as a home cook, do it the other way around.
Okay, good. So you read your ingredient and say, what can I do to
exactly
yeah to show off
exactly.
this particular vegetable. Yeah. So
and I know that, again, if I want to out of the box have something like super tight that has some structure to it, then a butternut would be a choice that I would know would deliver for me.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas yeah. you know, whereas a calabaza might fall apart, have a little more fiber,
yeah.
a little bit more liquid,
yeah.
you know, behave a little differently.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it would be actually really fun to do a tasting of a bunch of different ones and, you know, cooked, just barely cooked with maybe just a touch of salt and really be able to taste all the different styles.
Yeah, and some are chestnutty and some are sweeter and some are finer textured and they're fabulous. But among your cookbooks I mentioned in the introduction, you know, you focused on a number of different cuisines, and within some of the more overall, like the Mad Hungry books, there's lots of different cuisines represented, but you've done like Jamaican and Italian, and did your family then have to like eat those cuisines every day for a year while you were working on those projects?
Oh, they've had to. I mean, my career has been so long. I mean, in what, like 31 years of the kids being around,
yeah.
Whatever food project I'm working on, they always have had to do that. One time I did it depends on what it is. So they're used to it, and they like it. And the other day, one of the the young men, which is what they are now, said, you know, I used to love it because once you got onto something, you know, you were cooking regional Mexican food for 5 years. You were, you know, cooking the foods of the Mekong Delta for, you know, 5 or 6 years. And actually, as we talk, I'm in my office with my all of my cookbooks, and I have such love for them because I have, you know, just learned so much and continue to learn so much and go to different sections for different things. And if a new cookbook is coming in here, it's really going to have to earn its place on these shelves because there are so many that
I know.
It means that I'm probably going to take one out, you know? And so my family has been incredibly adventurous. They're also brutally honest. and as you know, nowadays I don't just do the books that I'm writing. Like, I will pitch stories to magazines and do stories. And as you know, being on the other side, you know, I will pitch a lot of ideas and they'll come back and it'll, you know, boil down to what maybe somebody else is choosing. And then I'm sitting here making a recipe, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 times to get it right so that it has all of those elements, that it tastes delicious, that there's not too many ingredients, that it's doable for whoever's reading the recipe. And sometimes I just go, it's right. And one of the family will be like, no, I know you think it is, but it's just, you wouldn't accept this. And accepting this isn't, like I said, making it fancy, you know, making it complicated, it's just nailing that deliciousness in a way that looks good and makes a lot of sense.
So
I'm really happy that they've been on this adventure with me.
So is that Jamaican inspired pumpkin curry stew on your website that I found? And actually, there's a version that calls for a pig's tail, but maybe we can skip that one because, you know me, I'm not into the pig's tail.
That's funny because that was the very first book. That book also has goat's head soup in it. And when we did an abridged copy for the U.S. audience, we definitely didn't include that one either.
But what about the one that's the vegetable version? Tell me what goes into a pumpkin vegetable curry stew.
Well, it's, the stew. I thought you meant the soup.
Oh, sorry.
The soup had the pig's tail. And actually, the soup, I make the soup throughout the year probably at least once a month. And I think, it does have to do with, like, in my neighborhood uptown, sometimes I'll see those calabaza pumpkins, and whenever I see them, and they are quite big, they'll be sold in maybe like 2-pound chunks, and I can see how beautiful and deep and orange they are. But I learned this soup from Jamaicans in Jamaica, and it's really interesting, the technique. It's worthwhile mentioning. You can do it vegetarian or not, but what I do is I'll buy a couple pounds of some kind of a beef bone of some nature, and this is the part that you could leave out if you wanted to, but like a short rib or shin or something like that, and put it in a pot of water, just straight water, with about 2 pounds of pumpkin that's been cubed.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have the water and you have the bones, or you can, at that point, you could also use like a chicken back if you wanted to, or you could, and then I cook that down. I cook it until the pumpkin dissolves and is easily mashed.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly you have this absolutely gorgeous orange broth. It's like a brothy, not a thick. So this is not a pureed soup, like a pureed.
Right.
And it's very thick. And you take out the bones and the meat, and then to that add sprigs of fresh thyme, scallion, and garlic, and you let that cook for about another 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And critically is a Scotch bonnet pepper, which is not diced; it's whole. And that's a whole other story about my obsession with those peppers. But they, if you leave them whole and you cook them in your soup, they let off the floral nature of the Scotch bonnet without it being that fierce spice.
Not just the heat,
really,
right?
Really exciting flavor. What I do is return any meat that might be cooked and shredded back into the pot. And then I always add something called spinners, which are like a Jamaican dumpling. They're so called because you spin the dough between the palms of your hand right into the pot. So they're kind of oblong, long, and thin. And that's literally like flour, water, and salt.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this tremendously beautiful gold, you know, deep orange soup, but then you have these little spinners floating throughout. And And then that pepper that I remove that doesn't leave too much heat behind, again, but it leaves flavor behind, I'll put that on the table with a little pair of tweezers. And then whoever wants can just squeeze that blazing heat into their soup, but they don't have to.
That's sweet.
That particular recipe.
That soup, okay.
Which I adore and, you know, make all of the time. But you were talking about...
Well, then you have a pumpkin vegetable curry stew that I found as well, and that's different. And when we can give the recipes, the links to the recipes with the transcript of this as well.
I ate that. So in Jamaica, there's obviously a real tradition of Rastafarian cooking, and which is 100% vegetarian, and oftentimes, you know, even without some of the spices and stuff. So the pumpkin vegetable curry stew became a favorite, and what I loved about it was that it was a super hearty meal that my family enjoyed and asked for, and I would always try to sneak in these 100% vegetarian dishes that, you know, satisfied meat eaters, but, you know, were vegetarian, and this is one of them. I should add that the calabaza is such a ubiquitous vegetable down there that it's used in many different ways, which is why I mean from, like, you know, fritters to desserts and so forth, pumpkin, and so I think that's why there are so many wonderful dishes. But anyway, to just sort of briefly run through, you're really just starting with about a pound of pumpkin that's been peeled and chopped, and you're cooking onion and garlic in oil, and then if you make your own curry powder, fine. I was just at this marvelous store in New York City called Colustium.
Oh, I love it.
If anybody's listening. And
they have a website, too. I can give the link. People can order.
Give the link, yeah, and wants to, you know, sort of like I like to go to markets in different cities that I'm in, but they have literally every spice under the sun. But they have an entire curry section where all these different curries are formulated for specific cuisines. And in fact, they have a Jamaican curry, which tends to, you know, have its own specific flavor. But in any event, you have a curry powder, and to that onion and garlic mixture that's been cooking for about a minute, you're just adding really some curry powder, cinnamon, ginger, salt, and pepper. And here I also should mention that I would not ever really add that raw. I always cook off spices like that.
I would add
them to the fat and cook them off instead of just, like, when I'm suspect when I see recipes where they're just thrown into the liquid. And then to that, I add tomatoes, and two tomatoes chopped. And so the picture is that of sort of like a thick relish-like base that is going to inform the flavor. So it's going to be kind of quite a concentrated flavor that's going to inform the eventual stew. And then after that, what you're doing is you add water to scrape up the bottom of the pan, because at that point you've got all kinds of nice flavor developing on the bottom of the pan, like, you know, like a fond, it's called, literally, and it's where those crystallization, caramelization, you know, just short of almost burning, and then if you get the liquid in there and scrape it up, that's where all your flavor is. And going back to me satisfying meat eaters with vegetarian food, I really try to find ways to build deep flavor without meat when I'm cooking vegetarian for this family. Anyway, so the liquid that goes in there, And you've got about a half a cup to a cup of water, and to that I then add the cut up pumpkin, carrot, chopped potatoes. If I don't have the potatoes, I don't worry. And if I have a green banana, which is wonderful,
right,
I'll put chunks of green banana in there too. And then there again, a whole Scotch bonnet pepper that I don't pierce.
Right.
And I just bring it up to a simmer and cook it until it starts to boil a little bit, cover it, and then I just cook it for about 20 minutes, stirring it a couple of times, and remove that green, that spicy pepper before.
Yes, same way. Yeah,
I serve it.
Yeah,
and sometimes if I want to and I have it, I will add. There's a couple variations I'll do. I'll add red peas. They call them red peas, but they're really like red beans. You know, maybe a cup of red peas for a little more protein. And sometimes, even if I have it, I'll add some coconut milk.
So in the name of time, because we only have 3-4 minutes left, I want to make sure to get a chance to ask you about your mad, hungry, mad, crazy. you have this crazy thing called a spurtle, your tool thing that you're doing now. And I want to have a minute for that. But when you went recently to the Middle East, you brought back, and we can give the recipe, but tell me what pumpkin thing really got to you in your recent trip to Israel.
Yes, it was surprising if for anybody who's listening who's traveled and knows that you sit down often to, I don't know, half a dozen salads are put down in front of you,
yeah,
in little bowls.
Like a mezze kind of, yeah.
You know, we went to a Libyan restaurant in Yaffa, in Tel Aviv, Yaffa section of Tel Aviv, and it down went, and this was a Libyan spread, which is similar but very different also with its own identity. And in one dish was an orange sort of relish thing, and I took a bite of it, and it was just like an eye-opener for me. I was like, what is this? And then I did some research and discovered it was something called cherchi. I believe I'm correctly saying it, C-H-E-R-S-H-I.
Uh-huh.
And when I got home and started playing around, and I've used butternut, I've used calabaza, I've used sugar, is literally you're just cooking garlic and oil and cumin, coriander, putting your pumpkin in there with some hot pepper flakes and a little bit of water and cooking it until you mash it into a kind of however smooth or thick you want it, and a little olive oil on top, and then you can just dip anything in there. You can make it a part of a mezze spread.
So we'll give the full recipe with the transcript so that people can try the cherchi, yeah, or however we say it, the Libyan pumpkin spread.
It was an epiphany. I recommend that people,
okay,
try it.
I'm gonna put that recipe online. So tell me, in the couple 2 minutes we have left, what is this spurtle thing that you're doing? What is this? I see you, like, you're even on QVC sometimes, and you have like this tool. What is this crazy tool? It's
this
not a spatula.
Tool,
it's not a spoon.
This tool organically arrived in my life and transformed into a business. Actually, is a spurtle. Literally, is a 500-year-old tool from Scotland that was designed to stir oatmeal. Now, cut to the present time where I happened to purchase one, an heirloom piece from a carver out west, and it became something I used all the time, and I put it on my television set, and I didn't realize until people wrote in, what is that tool, that elongated wooden spoon thing you keep using? So the carver sold it on our set for a year, and then he said, thank you, but no more, because I can't carve any faster. And we made our own version out of bamboo, and it has become very popular, like a go-to kitchen tool, to the point where we now have several varieties under Mad Hungry. It is, you know, you have to use it to know it, is the best way to put
so
it.
So I'm going to show, I'll show people pictures. It comes in, so there's different tools now, and they come in silicone and the different woods and stuff. And
We really expanded. It's become a little cottage business, not so little, to the point where it permitted me to transition from a corporate job into a startup business, which is extraordinary
with your
and
family.
Fun and
yeah.
crazy.
So Lucinda Scala Quinn, the queen of the pumpkin as well as the spurtle. I'm so glad to speak to you again, and I think I'm going to do a book giveaway of one of your books too, along with the transcript. So I'll figure that out, and people can look for that with the transcript. As I said, thanks for making the time, Lucinda, and the recipes.
Oh, wonderful.
Talk to you
soon. I can't wait to get some gardening advice from you.
Okay, I'm here.
All right. All righty.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Thanks to all of you for listening, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook or Instagram at Away to Garden, and happy gardening meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.